Wondering how you can help and support the I Am Necessary podcast platform? Well, you can go to anchor.fm/I Am Necessary. That's anchor, anchor.fm/I Am Necessary. Scroll down just a little bit, find the support button, click support, and there will be instructions on how you can have a sponsorship anywhere from 99 cents a month to $9.99 per month to help boost this podcast and this platform. Okay? So thank you so much for taking the time to listen to me. I really appreciate it. And with that being said, let's start the show. Hello and welcome to the I Am Necessary podcast. As always, this is your guy, Marcel. So today, I have the pleasure of introducing you guys to one of my childhood friends who happened to be recently retired from the corrections world. And she's on the phone with me now, so I thought, wow, what a good opportunity, because I've always been curious about behind the gate, behind the walls, from the days I used to take kids to the, we had a scared straight kind of program when I was working with at-risk youth, and I always wanted to have a sit-down with somebody who was actually in the mix, so today, I get that opportunity. So I have my girl Keena on the phone. Keena, what's up?
How you doing?
Cool in the gang. Thank you so much for taking this time to chill with me and my audience. You just recently retired, correct?
My official retirement date was July 31st, 2020. But 1 week ago, I went ahead and went to my job and signed off.
Okay. And how long were you in corrections?
My stay time would have been going on 24 years September, but due to injuries and being off on some of these injuries for a year and a half or more, those years don't count. So the state had me clocked at 21 and a half years.
Oh, wow. That's still a nice piece of change. Mm-hmm. Man. Okay. And yeah. What facilities have you worked at during your career?
I only worked at one facility, which was California State Prison Solano in Vacaville, California.
Okay. All right. And what types of positions have you held since you've been in corrections?
Well, as a correctional officer, you work in just about all positions, especially when you start. They have you some everywhere. I've done hospital coverage, which is where there's an inmate in a hospital and you basically watch them, you know, for 8 hours until the next shift. So I've worked in towers, transportation, taking guys to doctor's appointments, court, just about every position. My last position was receiving and release, which we call R&R, where buses or vans come in and transfer guys or pick guys up, drop them off. Guys parole, report to prison. We take photos, fingerprinting their packages when they're able to order packages and get what we call zoom zooms and wham whams, where they have to order clothing, underwear, hygiene. I also, that was my last position. I worked on the yard, meaning outside, where these guys are exercising, and that's about it. So just about every position I've experienced.
So which was, if you had to choose one, which was your favorite, and why is that? Why was that one your favorite?
Ooh. And there, I don't know if there's such thing as a favorite, but people do. That's why we have bidding, where you can bid your job. And of course, it goes by seniority. I used to like this one tower, very, very busy, but you're by yourself. You know, it's kind of like a peace of mind, even though it's busy, but there's nobody in there with you. But you control a lot of gates in the institution. So that was one of my favorites. But see, being in there, at least you have to report to incidents, you know, like if something happens, fights or anything. But other than that, probably that one, the tower, which was called Tower 15.
Okay, so you control the gates and everything. So that, it appears if someone's in the tower, that means other officers are pretty dependent and reliant on your ability to be vigilant and know what you're doing.
Oh, yes, because people are walking and going from different yards and you're controlling all the gates to these yards, even vehicles coming in and out. You control all that. So it was like, wow, it was like, I can't remember the number of gates you controlled, but it was a lot.
Wow.
And so, you just have to take your time because it can be stressful. You know, you got speaker boxes that you have to speak on. Sometimes you got a radio in there. got a phone in there, so if the phones get to ringing, people calling you on the radio, whatever, but it's very busy. But like I said, I like it. A lot of people don't like it. That's it. They didn't have a choice but to wait on you to open and close the gates. And the worst part is when people, I used to turn the boxes off, the speaker boxes, because you hear people talking and asking you to open the gate, but people don't think about, oh, maybe this person is relieving themselves. There's nobody there to help you out with that part. So they just have to be patient.
Wow. It sounds like it's a lot that goes on. Air traffic controller, sounds like.
Almost. Exactly. Mm.
So share with us, as an officer, what does a bad day look like?
You never know when the poop hits the fan. A bad day would be when you have, when I started, it was riots, a lot of riots, a lot of guys. I worked in a male institution, so people fighting and just to see a bloody day. So that's a bad day. Regardless if they're inmates, they're still humans. And just to see somebody almost lose their life or lose their life, that's a bad day. Someone trying to commit suicide, that's a bad day. I've never been assaulted, but just to hear about people that have been, that's a bad day. You just never know what'll happen. So I think the stress starts by the time you drive into the institution to report to work, because you just never know. You never know what kind of day it's going to be.
Wow. And you said you never been assaulted. So why do you think that is? What is it about you, your mentality, or how you carried yourself that you feel like you never were assaulted?
I don't know. It's just luck and blessing, because you don't know what type of people you're dealing with, because you have mental illness in there too. So you just don't know. You don't know, because it can happen anytime. You're around these guys all the time. Mm-hmm. So you never know when a person would just snap and just do whatever they want to do. So I don't know. I tried to carry myself as well as I could, but you know, you have professional days and you have unprofessional days, but it just didn't happen to me. Thank God.
And that's as a female. Now, what off the top of your head, if you had to pick a number or a percentage, what percentage of officers are female?
Ooh. You know, I don't think I can give you either, because I don't know. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's more men than it is women.
Okay.
But even though a lot of those guys doing time, a lot of them hate women because they're in prison because of a woman.
Wow.
A lot of times being a female kind of helps, because they look at you as a mother figure or a sister. And I think they feel more comfortable with dealing with females than they do males. So the percentage, I really couldn't give you, because I don't know, because it's a lot of people.
But it's safe to say
I don't know.
More males than females.
Definitely.
Okay. And with that being said, you said that a lot of these inmates hate women because of whatever reason. What challenges did you face as a female officer from inmates, and not only from inmates, but from maybe your peers as well?
Well, with the inmates, I've been stalked before. That probably was the worst. I handled it. But for females, you could be stalked, guys trying to ask you out, try to date you. But then a lot of times they do that because either they really do like you, I don't know, or they're trying to get something into the prison.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as staff, being a female, I probably didn't really pay attention because of who I am and the way I was raised. A lot of guys, I gotta say, a lot of the guys or staff were cool. A lot. I learned a lot from them, especially when I started. But that's probably about it. I never had. So you're gonna get some people that might say the wrong thing to you, and you have to check them. Like, hold on, wrong person. You know, like, don't come at me like that. So sometimes some people think they could say anything to you, and that's not true. Just because you got a mouth, you don't always have to use it. Just about everything you do is challenging.
Well, you touched on something that is curious to me. You said that sometimes these inmates are nice to you or whatever because they want to date you. Have you ever seen or known of inmates actually dating officers?
You hear about it. Maybe not a lot, but it does happen in all prisons. It happens, and then you hear about it, you kind of like just brush it off your shoulder because it doesn't have anything to do with you. But it does happen. How, I don't know, but I don't understand what these guys can tell you in the prisons that another man can't tell you outside the prison, or another person can tell you at a store that you're at. So I don't know what kind of game they got, but they got it.
I mean, they got nothing else to do but just come up with good game.
Exactly. And then some of these people come back to the prisons to visit these guys because you're going to lose your job. You might be getting away with something. You think you are, but somebody's going to tell. It doesn't even have to be staff. It could be another inmate.
Right.
That tell on you, and you'll never know that it was another inmate, but it happened. So it's sad, but it does.
Because I heard of, and I know a lot of people who've done time, and I know of an inmate who, I don't remember what prison this was at, but he was dating one of the correction officers and, you know, getting special little privileges here and there. And when I heard about it, I was like, wait, what? And then I guess it was going pretty good. And she is the one that actually fessed up on herself. So I guess she got in trouble, and I guess he had to go in the hole, whatever that is, and things of that nature. So, and I don't know how true that is, but that's something that I heard from actual inmate. So it just blew me away. And then I've spoken to inmates before. I'm like, how are you calling me? You know, I got a cell phone. You know, I got a Facebook page. And I'm like, wait, what? So either they're very clever or I have no idea of what really happens behind those walls. So
neither do.
What was you going to say?
You know, that's why they have certain positions that have to investigate stuff like that. Her telling on herself, that's good because she still would have got caught eventually, lost her job. But there was something I was thinking about when you were telling me and now I got a brain fart. And just so people will know, too, is it's not always correctional staff. People got to understand, they call a prison is a city within a city. Meaning we have doctors, nurses, plumbers, electricians, teachers. We have a lot of staff in there. So it's not always correctional officers. So I want a lot of people to understand that, too, because we have a bad name. People think we're not treating them right or whatever, but they have to understand that there's other staff in there also have relationships or something going on with these people.
It's funny you brought that up because until you just said that, I never even thought about that myself. Like, there's a lot that goes on, so I can only imagine how tight the security has to be with people coming in and out all the time with all kinds of stuff. And you are correct. I just never thought about that. It's not just I'm sure corrections officers probably at some times don't like dealing with so many people that's coming in because it may make their jobs more difficult. I didn't think about that.
Because everyone is checked when they come in.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the lunch bags, no, you're not padded down. No, we don't go through metal detectors because our clothing have zippers on them, at least for us, and then other staff, whatever they may be carrying on their bodies. So it's easy, even for visitors, it's easy to bring stuff in. And it's unfortunate because your life is on the line. You sit here and barter with these people, with these inmates. What if I have an issue with this inmate and you don't have my back? Because not knowing, you might have some kind of dealing with this inmate and bringing stuff in for them or whatever. You just don't know. Some people have an eye for it now. Don't get me wrong. Some people will look and be like, I think such and such got something going on. I don't know. Well, go tell somebody because I don't want to have nothing to do with this. If I see something, I'm telling. But it's better that out of sight, out of mind. I just want people to know it's not just correctional officers or correctional staff that does these what we would call dirty things.
Wow. And let me back up a little bit. What originally made you want to get into this field?
I know a lot of people that were in corrections, but didn't think about it. One of my brothers one day said, why don't you give the Department of Corrections a try, you know, sign up for it. And at that time, I think I was pregnant. With my daughter, which is my second child. I only got two, but I went through the process. And I did the paperwork 6 months after I had my daughter. I was in the academy. And here I am, there I was, and here I am. So it was just one of my brothers saying something to me, but I didn't know what I was going to do at the time. I had jobs, but I didn't know I was going to be a correctional officer. But once I went through the process, I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I did it because it brought me a long way.
And through all these years and everything that you've seen, how do you manage or how did you manage to leave work at work? You know, I know that must be difficult you have a bad day or you see something or something goes down on the yard or whatever, and then but at 5 o'clock you got to go home and you still got people who don't know or don't care about what's going on there. So how did you manage to just leave that stuff on the yard, so to speak?
You have to check yourself before you go out those gates. It's hard because I probably remember one situation where I had some words with an inmate. We just bumped heads. By the time I got to one of the doors on my way out, I was like, let that go. Let it go. So I'm talking to myself as I'm going to my car. You have to let it go because why would you, you know, some people go home and start picking fights with their family and beating on their kids and their husbands and wives and whatever, but they just, you don't want to bring that home. That's horrible. People have lost their families because they couldn't let things go. So that one day really made me realize you got to get it together because you definitely don't want to bring this home to your kids. Mm-hmm. So you really have to check yourself before you go out those doors or those gates. So it worked, okay. You know, but for some it didn't, unfortunately.
And I'm going to circle back to something surrounding that a little later, but on that same token, how do you keep from, if officers do, because every job you have, there's that one person that you're like, man, if this motherfucker don't, who? Or there's that one inmate that you're like, man, he annoys me. He really annoys me. So how do you keep yourself from doing something you shouldn't be doing, treating an inmate a little extra dirty because he's annoying?
Communication. I'll tell him, because that's how, the type of person I am. I don't have a problem with apologizing either, whether you're an inmate or my coworker. Because if I know I said or did something wrong, I did not have a problem with apologizing. And when you're in the heat of the moment, that's a different story. But when you think about it later, it's like, nah, you was wrong. Go back. So I will communicate with these guys. They appreciate that. Or whoever, your staff member, you know, your coworkers, they appreciate that you came back to have this conversation with them. So that's what I would do. I would communicate with them, and we would talk about it. That made me feel better, too.
Yeah. You let that weight off your chest or carrying this around. Exactly. Yeah, carrying it around is not doing anybody any good.
No. It's stress. There's more stress on you.
Have you ever been in a situation where you're just strolling around at work, and the new bus comes in, and it's somebody is such and such that you knew, you know, like, what are you doing in here? How often do you come across people that you knew on the outs? Next thing you know, they're on the bus coming in.
It's funny because it started when I was in the academy, because we get to visit a few prisons during our training. And I seen somebody from Vallejo, and I'm looking at him, and just, I was like, what are you doing here? Because they'll tell you, you know, don't talk to these guys, and but please, I'm gonna be myself. But what are you doing here? I never known of this guy to ever be in trouble, mm-hmm. any kind of trouble. And so we talked for a hot second, and that was it. So it started there. Now, when I get to the institution, there's way more people because I'm from the Bay Area. Right. So people you done partied with in the clubs, people you grew up with, they expect you to do a memo, which is a memorandum. If you know somebody, write a memo because they want to make sure this person is okay to stay there and do their time, or they want to make sure they're not a threat to you because they want to make sure you're not trying to do something on the sly, like bring stuff in for them or them trying to ask you these questions. So I would have had to do hundreds if I did a memo for everybody that I knew, because I knew a lot of people. Because when you're from the Bay, you dang near know everybody because everybody got along. You partying in clubs with them, you know, whatever. So I probably did a memo for a couple of people because I didn't like the way they approached me out loud. Because, see, if another inmate knows this, they might pressure them and be like, hey, get with her. I want you to have her bring some stuff in. Then they have to worry about their safety. And then what about my safety? So I wasn't shocked when I seen the people that I grew up with, especially the ones that I knew were troublemakers, but I didn't like it because these were people I grew up with, and they were always like brothers to me. Mm-hmm. They knew me, my brothers, my parents, so some of my other family members. So I didn't like it. I didn't like seeing it. And then once they seen me, or they told me I don't like, they didn't like seeing me in there as far as having a job in there because they were worried about my safety. So, and they're not going to always be there if I'm in trouble and they're not there to save me because they told me these things. So, yes, I ran into plenty of people that I grew up with or partied with.
Have you ever worked in a facility where they had those quote-unquote high-profile inmates?
Not where I was at. I don't recall any high-profile. You may have had ex-NBA players or somebody that played in sports or something, but as far as high-profile, like heinous crimes or something like that, I don't recall any, but I've been told by other staff members, like, I remember one sergeant's brother. He told me his brother pulled up. You know, his brother was in the hole, which we call ASA, administrative segregation. That's kind of like a protective custody area. And his brother was mad at him because he was in the hole. And he had to tell his brother, I work here, so you can't be here. That's why they put you here. So that's about it, but no high profile that I can recall. Because we're like a level two, level three prison. So level four is where they probably would be because of their high-profile case.
Okay. What are some of the things systematically you wish you could change?
I wish they would focus on whether it's our union reps or any higher-ups like associate warden, your warden, your chief deputy warden. When you take these positions, check on your staff because they're so focused on these inmates, it seems like they want to make sure they're good and they're okay. Yeah, they're humans. You don't want them treated bad, but what about your staff? We're the ones doing the work. People go out sick, whether it's mentally or they go out with cancer, an injury. We had one lady. She was a union rep years ago. She's retired. She took the time to have cards. She would go to the store and purchase cards for people that were sick or injured and have people sign it, put little messages on the card, and send it to the person to let them know we're thinking about you. Are you okay? I don't see that anymore. And I brought it up to so many people that are high up. And before I left, it's still not being done. And that's sad because when you have that time to sit at home and think about, am I going back to that place? Or you get people that are suicidal. We've had these prisons have many people that committed suicide. Why? Some of them we don't know, some we do, but it happens. You only think about that person when they're gone, but you wasn't thinking about that person when they were here, sitting at home, dealing with whatever issue they had. So I wish they would really start checking on their staff just to make sure they're okay or if they need anything. So I tried working on something before I left, but I didn't get that help. Kind of upset about it, but it's still never too late to try to work on it or put it in somebody else's ear. That's there in that care, because sometimes it makes you think, and you hear a lot of people saying, they don't care. The Department of Corrections don't care about us, so they don't.
And let me jump back to the inmate side. This question was in the back of my head. What is the, if you remember, the youngest inmate that you've come across?
When I started the job, I went to ASEG, the hole, and there were two Hispanic inmates in a cell together, 16 years old, for murder. I don't know if they committed their crime together or not, but they both were 16 years old doing a life sentence. And they had to be in a hole because of their age. These are adult prisons, so they had them in there for protective custody. But I definitely remember that day.
16. Now, do you think, in just your opinion, that the prisons can do a better job of, quote-unquote, rehabilitating people?
Of course, they can do better, but, you know, what are people always talking about? Money, money, money. We don't have the funding. We don't have this and that. I don't believe that. I think the state got money. You can do whatever you want. They have programs. They have a lot of good programs. AA, NA, self-help programs. They have it. But a lot of times these programs get shut down because of funding. Does it help these guys? It definitely does. A lot of these guys are willing to get help. You don't have to be a drug addict to do an NA class. People take these programs, get certificates, because they may become a drug counselor or alcoholic counselor when they get on the street. So I think it helps. If you're willing to get the help, it helps. But I think the state tries. I just don't think they try hard enough because, you know, you always have to find the people that you got to pay to come in and run these programs. But we have the room for it. A lot of the prisons have the room for it, you know, so I think they should. I don't know. I think they should just try harder. Are they? I don't know. But it just so people know, those programs are there. I'm sorry. You can't cover everybody. It's so many people. You can only hold so many people in a classroom. So when they're done, then you can start another program. But then sometimes these guys might be out of prison by then or gone to another institution or whatever. And a lot of these guys hate when they find out they're going to get transferred to something and they're in a program or they're trying to get their GED or something. They hate it because they're being moved and then they're going to start over again or however it is or happens. But these guys really enjoy it. Give them something to do instead of just sitting around playing basketball and playing dominoes and stuff like that. It's not about being a punk or you soft because you're doing this and whatever. They trying to educate themselves and get better so they'll be better citizens when they get on the street.
And how much of an influence inside the prisons? You know, we see this on documentaries and A&E and all of that when they have these prison shows. But how big of an influence do gang members actually have inside prison?
Ooh, oh, wow. They have a big influence. The inmates run the prisons. Hmm. They run those prisons. It's sad of how you have to live your life, though, when you go into prison like that because you have to listen to somebody else. You may not have listened on the street, but you're going to listen to them because you may be forced to join a gang. And it's sad, it's unfortunate, but it happened. I don't want to see these guys get hurt, killed, or dang near killed, but it happens. If you're told what to do, you better do it. Otherwise, you better get out of there. I've had many people come up to me and say, I have to get off the yard. I have to go. I don't even ask why, because I don't want to know why, but I have to. Now I have to protect them and get them out of there. Do a little paperwork of what happened, you know, when he approached me, and then lock him up in the hole until he's transferred somewhere else. Does it follow them? Yes, it will follow them to other prisons. The word will get out, and his or her life is still in danger. So, yes, the inmates run the prison.
Wow. When that bus pulls up at intake, how fast must you size him up to prevent something from jumping off right then and there at the gate?
I guess you can't. When they in that position, you only see them for a little bit. So you don't really get to, like, know them. There have been fights that broke out immediately when they came off that bus, end up in a holding tank. The poop hits the fan there, and they're fighting. And now you have to respond because you don't know. You don't know what you're getting, mm-hmm. what type of people you're getting. You know, it could have been a northern Hispanic that was put in the tank with a southern Hispanic. We know this stuff ahead of time, and we also ask them when they get off the bus. But sometimes they beat up their own kind, their own people. So, I mean, I've had people come off the bus and, whoa, hey, it's somebody I grew up with, you know. Mm-hmm. So you can't really tell. I mean, you know, when you have a conversation with them or something, it's like, nah, you ain't going to make it because whatever reason. So some of them got some growing to do. But mm-hmm. it don't matter what age you are either. Some of them got some growing to do. So guys, that's their life. You know, and they know nothing else, but kind of hard to tell how they're going to turn out. But I've seen it where they're there, and the next thing you know, they've been walked over to ASIG because they didn't make it within a few hours. So it happens, so you just can't tell. Can't always tell.
And if you, let's say you're in a fight in prison and you just get your ass kicked, does that stay with you? Do other inmates actually see you as weak and now you become a victim?
If they see me as weak, they ain't gonna tell me that, but I could care less, you know. But I'm just there to do my job. So I remember one time, you'll know when something happens, even if it's not near you. When guys are on that yard exercising, playing handball, basketball, playing softball, when everything stops and they're looking at something and your back is turned, then they know, I mean, you know something is wrong. And there's been many times where I've been involved in something, but you have ones that stick with you. Like, I had to write these guys up for attempted murder because this guy got attacked. And where me and my partner was positioned, it was warm outside, we're in shade, but the building we're at, we can't see around it. Now, unless, you know, we walk, you know, a few steps and we can see the rest of the yard. And when everybody stopped exercising and we got up and we were like, oh my God. So my partner, we both responded, walked towards it. This guy is asking for help. He's raising his hand. They're kicking the mess out of him and punching the mess out of him. And they wouldn't stop even when we were telling them to stop and get down. And then finally, when they did, because they were about to get pepper sprayed, right when they were about to get sprayed, the guy took one last kick to this man's face. And I was like, oh my God. So not only do you have to cuff them up, you have to call medical to come help this guy. And I seen him later and I said, I'm so sorry that this happened to you. He was like, it's okay, but you did your job. And then they had to be booked for attempted murder.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Trying to think back to when you were out of the academy and you first hit the yard. Do you think your training prepared you properly to go live on the yard?
No. We were all, at that time, you were only in the academy for 6 weeks, which is short. And just like with any job, you don't know to go into that job and just start working and you know what to do already. No, you have to learn from others. Mm-hmm. But if somebody, you know, of course, if there's an officer that does something that's not cool, but it worked for him, it's like, okay, I'm not doing that. You know, I ain't trying to lose my job. So you don't know what to do when you get in there. You have to learn as you go. Kind of like, what do they call the cops on TV or wherever? Not on TV, but cops, period. They, what is it called? Field training officer or
something like that.
So it's kind of like something like that. You got to learn from who you work with. And when we would get cadets that come and take tours, I would tell them, if something happens and I respond a different way, don't get to your prison and do what I did, because it may cost you your job. Because some of the things I do works for me, but it may not work for you. So don't do it. So that's it. So no, you don't know anything until you get in there and just really start working. The training is better now as far as how to respond to incidents and stuff like that compared to when I started. Because people used to go into fights and break people up physically. I never did that. But people used to do that. You don't do that because you can get hurt or even killed. It's not worth it. I've seen fathers and sons that had to fight against each other because of who they were affiliated with. The father may have been in one gang. The son was in a different one. It doesn't matter if you're father and son. If you're told to do something, you got to do it. So the training is better, and it could get better. That's why a lot of people back in the 70s got killed. They had less equipment, not so good training. So it's something else, but it's very dangerous. Good experience, but dangerous.
Okay. So a couple more questions. What advice would you give somebody who is currently thinking about getting into corrections?
Give it a try. It's not for everybody, but you won't know that until you give it a try. There's people that leave in the academy. The first prison they visit, you don't work when you go visit the prisons. You're just observing and taking a tour, basically. And some people leave and like, that's not for me. They get to their institution. However long it takes them to figure out if it's for them or not, I don't know. But some people leave once they get to their institution. So you don't know until you give it a try, but it is a good experience.
Is there anything specifically you would say different to a woman who's thinking about getting into corrections?
Like I would tell the women when the cadets would come in and visit, I said, I don't know if this is going to offend you or not, and I don't care, but I'm going to tell you this. If you come in here to look for a man, you're in the wrong place. You get staff members that fall for each other. There's some of them get married, some of them don't, you know, whatever. But people date, but not to the guys in blue, not the inmates. So if that's what you're coming to look for, you're in the wrong place. You're here to do a job. So when you do your job, try your best to do a good job, because you're really there to help somebody. I didn't learn for years that I'm there to help somebody. And before I retired, I thought about, because I wasn't going to work as it is, but, you know, for my injury, you know, dealing with pain, but I felt my job wasn't done yet. But me not going to work, I had to get in there. But I just felt I had more work to do with these guys to help them before I left for good. So there are guys that did life sentences that I'm in contact with now. They've been out for years, and I'm in contact with checking on them, making sure they're okay. They're doing great. And just like they would check on me when, you know, people would check on me when I would miss work. You think they'd just be kidding, but they were serious. Like, where were you? You haven't been at work. Are you okay? They mean it. Some people may think they don't, but they do. No, nobody's there to be friends, but I know they were real. And I do appreciate that. Hmm. You know, I bump heads with a lot of guys, but we're okay. You know, we made sure we were okay and move on with your life. So I said enough.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Keena, for taking this time out and educating us on what really goes on. Because everybody, you know, people watch TV or they hear this and they hear that and they think they know what really happens behind the walls. But I can tell you right now, just this little conversation we had, I learned a lot. So I hope anybody who hears this can now redefine some of the things that they thought it was like and put it into perspective for what it's really like. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
All right. So this is Marcel. This has been the I Am Necessary podcast. As always, be needed, be necessary. And if you made it wrong, make it right. And I'm out.